Mother Nature's finest killer, Mr. Wint.
One is never too old to learn from a master, Mr. Kidd.
Right there. Who are you?
Dr. Tynan sent us.
Why didn't he come himself?
He was taken sick.
Bitten by the bug. He sent this for you.
If God had wanted man to fly,
he would have given him wings, Mr. Kidd.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. On this week's episode, we present part two of our ongoing multi-part, probably six-part overall, coverage of the James Bond films in depth. With episode one of this six-part series last time, John Ringer joined me to talk about Dr. No, From Russia with Love, and Goldfinger. This week we present part two, in which John comes back and we complete our conversation of the Sean Connery films, plus the George Lazenby film of 1969, On Her Majesty's Secret Service. We also spare a few moments to talk about Never Say Never Again, the 1983 Connery return in a non-Eon Productions film that was not an official part of the Bond canon. All right, so without further ado, let's get back into the conversation. Here is John speaking with me in part two, where we pick up the conversation with 1965's Thunderball. 1965, the last of the every year Bond movies. They just couldn't, like I said a while ago, they just couldn't, you know, sustain making these things every year because they'd gotten so big already. And Thunderball was huge.
Two atomic bombs, numbers 456 and 457, are now in the possession of Spectre. Unless within the next 7 days your government pays to us £100 million, we shall destroy a major city in England or the United States of America.
Unless the bombs are recovered, payment will have to be made.
I've assigned you to Station C, Canada.
Sir, I respectfully suggest that you change my assignment to Nassau.
Is there any other reason besides your enthusiasm for water sports?
There was a photograph of that man in this dossier you gave us. His name is Duval. Well, I saw him last night at Shrubland's. But he was dead.
Oh, no, sir, not possible. He was seen boarding the Vulcan, took off last night.
If 007 says he saw Duval last night at Shrublands and he was dead, that's enough for me to initiate inquiries.
Perhaps we can have dinner together, Domino.
How do you know my friends call me Domino?
It's on the bracelet on your ankle.
What sharp little eyes you've got.
Wait till you get to my teeth.
Tell London I've made contact with the girl.
James Bond, who only has to make love to a woman, and she starts to hear heavenly choir singing.
Don't flatter yourself. What I did this evening was for king and country. You don't think it gave me any pleasure, do you?
You seem to be unbeatable, Mr. Bond.
You would like Bond dead.
I can think of no better arrangement.
Next time I see you, I'll put you across my knee.
Behave yourself, Mr. Bond. When the time is right, you will be killed. I shall kill him. Shouldn't you get out those wet clothes?
Try to be a little less than your usual frivolous self, 007.
I think you got the point.
Lago had your brother murdered, or it was on his orders.
Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people will die, and very soon, if you don't help me.
Like your friend, you've been a little too clever, and now you are caught. You let him get the better of you. Do not live in hope, my dear. There is no one to rescue you.
He obviously has a highly developed sense of drama.
Thunderball had a much, like, 9 times the budget of the first one. In fact, if you add the budget of the first three together, it's not as much as Thunderball. But on the other hand, guess what? Thunderball made more money than any other Bond movie until Skyfall in real terms, you know, adjusted for inflation.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. Oh, it was huge. And I mean, if you go back and watch Thunderball, I've watched it a couple of times lately. You forget just how great Thunderball is. I always kind of had it in the middle of my pack. Mm-hmm. But when you go back and watch it, it's probably in my top 4 or 5 now.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, you know, some people complain, well, the underwater stuff goes on too long. And there is some of that. But, I mean, in 1965, this was brand new, and they were going to try to put all that money up there on the screen, you know, and maximize it. So... But see, here's the thing I got to go into a little bit on Thunderball to be fair. Thunderball was written, was an original idea by a guy named Kevin McClory and Jack Whittingham. And they got together with Ian Fleming to work out Thunderball as a movie. And it didn't really get made It was going to be the first one if McClory had done it. And so Ian Fleming just goes ahead and writes the book, acts like it's all his idea. And the court case that evolves out of this would drag on for years and years. And it depends on who you support as to how you feel about it. You know, if you're really on Eon, the Broccoli and Salzman side, then Kevin McClory becomes just this yapping dog hanging at your ankle, messing you up for years and years and years. Because what happened was, the courts fairly early on ruled that most of the stuff that's just in Thunderball belonged to Kevin McClory. Mm-hmm. And so what that meant was Eon couldn't use Spectre. Well, they do a couple of times and they have to quit, but they couldn't use Spectre anymore. They couldn't use Blofeld anymore. And on the other hand, it meant that Kevin McClory could remake Thunderball as many times as he wanted, but he couldn't make any other James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to lead to Never Say Never Again. And if he'd lived a little bit longer, you probably would have gotten a third Thunderball movie. So what that means is that Thunderball gets made as the fourth James Bond movie in 1965 and was really huge. You get Emilio Largo as the new number 2 for Spectre, and he's got the great eye patch, right?
Mm-hmm. He's very villainous looking.
Well, there's so much about it. Go ahead and tell us what your recollections are and what occurs to you when you think about Thunderball.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, there's a great scene where early on where Bond uses a jetpack, which is always cool, and it has his car. But also, what I think about is, Largo and his guys from Spectre steal a couple of atomic bombs. They're planning to use them to blow up, I can't remember where, and a couple of cities. Mm-hmm. And they're blackmailing the civilized world in exchange for not using the bombs. And Bond comes to the Caribbean to stop them. And they end up having a bunch of underwater scenes. They have some fights on boats. Mm-hmm. You know, Bond's kidnapped, he escapes, and they end up having Felix Leiter comes and rescues them at the U.S. Navy SEALs. They have an underwater battle against Largo's guys, and at the end they chase Largo to his ship, which does this cool thing where it separates into like a hydrofoil and then drops off the back part, and then the hydrofoil races away, but Bond clings onto it, and then they have a fight, and he gets shot with a harpoon gun and dies.
Yeah, That's pretty much it. Yeah.
That's pretty much. So what I think about is that there's a lot of underwater stuff. I mean, I don't know, like a half an hour of the movie is like underwater scenes.
Well, it was the first time they really could do that. They developed a lot of that stuff for Thunderball. That's one of the reasons it cost so much money. And they used it. They put it up there on the screen.
They
so.
Did.
Yeah. I love the little opening sequence. It's got a great gun barrel sequence. Mm-hmm. And then you go to Bond's, you're a funeral for JB. This wouldn't be the only time that we are supposed to be led to believe that Bond is dead at the beginning. They kind of keep going back to this Bond is dead, but it turns out to be Jacques Bouvard, a Spectre agent, that he's at the funeral. And the guy turns out to be in drag as the widow. Mm-hmm. And so Bond is having a fight with allegedly the widow, who turns out to be the guy. And he kills him and then flies out in the jetpack, which is awesome. And, that's just the beginning. I mean, it's just a nonstop action ride. Codenamed Thunderball. They bring all the 00 agents together. You actually see, like, all nine of the 00 agents sitting there when Bond comes in last, as the last one to arrive, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, he goes after Largo. And you got Domino, right?
That's right. That's the girl's name. Yep.
And Fiona Volpe. Got a couple of really gorgeous women. A lot of this happens in Nassau in the Bahamas, which is gorgeous. The scenery's great. Mm-hmm. You got the first Sharks menace, the bad guy that uses sharks.
Is this the one where he's like in the pool with the sharks?
Yeah. And he swims through the little tunnel and with his little tiny breathing unit thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's just so many gadgets. It's the one where he's sneaking around the Largo's estate. In black, and he's mm-hmm. in a firefight with the bad guys. It sort of establishes a lot of that we see over and over later. I think it's the first time that Spectre sort of blackmails the world, which again, Austin Powers will parody later, where the $1 million, where they want like £100 million or they're going to nuke two cities because they get the nuclear weapons off of the Vulcan bomber that they capture early on. There's just so much great stuff in Thunderball. I think it's very people don't remember. Maybe we think about Goldfinger as the classic Bond and forget that a lot of that great stuff was actually in Thunderball or also in Thunderball. McClory actually got producer credit on this movie, and it really had as much negative impact on the series up until now, actually, right now with the new Spectre movie, because you're not going to see as much. As we might have otherwise seen of Spectre and Blofeld after a couple of more movies. So, which some people would actually say is probably a good thing because they were kind of wearing them out,
I don't have a problem with it from that perspective. From creative perspective, they needed to get away from it.
Okay.
Spectre was the every movie punching bag.
Yeah. So let's roll ahead into and bring into this conversation 1967. Now they skip a year. You Only Live Twice.
Interference with this spaceship will be regarded as an act of war.
If our Singapore tracking station is correct about the rocket not landing in Russia, then where did it land?
This is the big one, 007.
Good evening.
We assume it's Japan.
Welcome to Japan, Mr. Bond. And how do you like our country so far?
Well, at least he died on the job.
He'd have wanted it this way.
Rubbish. Bond is alive.
Request permission to come aboard, sir.
Are the Japanese equipped to launch such a rocket?
That's what you've got to find out, and fast.
I am a trifle disappointed at the ease with which I could pull you in.
Get in.
Get down!
I never take any risks.
I think you're taking one now.
I am.
This damn thing could blow up into a full-scale war.
I think I will enjoy very much serving under you.
For a European, you are exceptionally cultivated.
You will see that my piranha fish get very hungry. They can strip a man to the bone in 30 seconds.
Bon appetit.
I've got you now.
Well, enjoy yourself.
James Bond, allow me to introduce myself. I am Ernst Stavro Blofeld. They told me you were assassinated in Hong Kong.
Yes, this is my second life.
You only live twice, Mr. Bond.
All the things I do for England.
This is it, gentlemen. All we can do now is wait and pray.
Kill Bond, now!
You have a lot of energy for a dead man, Mr. Bond.
Now, You Only Live Twice is probably my sentimental favorite of all the Bond movies, period. Because it's the one I remember from when I was a kid seeing on like ABC Sunday night, you know, when you used to see them on the movies. And it's the classic, it's in Japan. It's got the volcano base for Blofeld. We have a great Blofeld in Donald Pleasance.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's creepy. He's the creepy Blofeld. You know, Telly Savalas is like the suave, hey, baby, Blofeld. But Pleasance is the creepy Blofeld. And then Charles Gray is just the aristocratic, annoying Blofeld, but I still like him. You've got the volcano base, the rocket that eats rockets. it's the one.
That's right.
This is the movie. It's the first one that gets completely away from the book. It has nothing to do with the book other than being in Japan. But it establishes this same formula they're going to use over and over later. In particular, The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, and several others, but those are the two that really jump out as being cookie cutter from the formula of You Only Live Twice. And that's super villain in a base with an army in certain bright colored uniforms planning some world domination plot, and Bond goes in and deals with it personally, and then at the end an army comes in and there's a giant fight. Right? We see that over and over in subsequent later big ones.
Yes, Bond, he has created a version to let the good guy army come in.
Yes, you see that exact story over again in Spy Who Loved Me, and then basically Moonraker was the Spy Who Loved Me in space.
That's right.
So with Drax playing the guy from The Spy Who Loved Me, who we'll talk about next time. So, I love You Only Live Twice. Tell me, when you think about this movie, what jumps out at you and how do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, the first thing I think about when I think of this movie is ninjas.
Yes. Tiger Tanaka and his ninja army. Yes.
I mean, because it's in Japan and there are a lot of ninjas in this movie, which is awesome. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
So I like that part. I like that they've done a lot of Caribbean stuff up to this point and some European stuff. So it was cool they went to Japan.
Yeah.
And I like the volcano as a secret base. Again, the emphasis on disrupting the space program.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, Bond freeing the astronauts they had captured, and then he disguises himself as an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
But then he has to get another kind of face-to-face meeting with Blofeld where, they had the big showdown discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And Blofeld was really good in this movie, too. Mm-hmm. And I think he's one I think about. So, and I remember that the bad guy sidekick got killed by dropping him in a pool of piranha, which is another very classic kind of James Bond way to kill somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always some kind of deadly thing they can feed him to. The two main, Bond girls in this one are Aki and the greatly named Kissy Suzuki. And I loved Aki was kind of in the first two thirds of the movie, and what she does makes no sense. But honestly, a lot of what anybody does in the James Bond movies doesn't make a lot of sense early on, because she rescues him, but then leads him on a chase and then traps him. But he's actually going to see Tiger, who's kind of like the Karim Bey of Japan.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so, yeah, when I'm asked who my favorite Bond ally is other than Felix Leiter, I'm always torn between Karim Bey and Tiger Tanaka, because they're both awesome. They both have their loyal army, and Tiger has like these women that work for him in top positions, Aki, and then she actually gets killed by the bad guys. And then Kissy Suzuki comes in the second or the last quarter basically of the movie to help him. But he also has his ninja army, which is, like you said, is awesome. This is, again, like you say, the one where he has to go in alone and fix it so that the army can come in behind him, and save the day while he goes after the main bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's another one where he ends up with the girl at the end.
And isn't this the one where he ends up with the girl in the life raft and the plane flies over and it grabs the rope from the balloon he's let up and it flies him away? Or am I thinking about?
No, that's at the end of Thunderball.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So, okay. Well, anyway, yeah. I should have mentioned that for Thunderball. So, yeah.
They use the Skyhook device, which was also used in the Dark Knight movie. So.
Yeah. So, but yeah, You Only Live Twice. One of my absolute favorites, if not my favorite, in terms of sentimental just memories. But Connery had said he wasn't going to do any more. He was done. He didn't like all the notoriety it gave him. He thought they weren't paying him enough, and they really honestly probably were not.
Sure.
Because it was making so much money, and they were just getting by with as little as they could pay him. And so he bows out. And by the way, you did get Charles Gray in this as a British ally of his living in Japan, and we'll see Charles Gray again coming up in a couple of movies. So in 1969, it's just amazing to me that they kept to the two-year schedule while totally recasting the lead. But they went out looking for a new Bond, and he came to them. An Australian model named George Lazenby, actually ran past the secretaries into their office, the Eon guys, you know, Broccoli and Salzman's office, and said, "I'm James Bond, you know, I'm the guy you want." And they ended up testing him, and they liked him. He wasn't a great actor, and he's not the best actor that ever played the role.
He's very stiff.
He is very stiff, but you know, he looked the part. He had the swagger, and honestly, having that charisma and swagger is half the battle as James Bond. It's the problem, I think. I think Timothy Dalton is a good actor, but he didn't have the swagger, and so I don't enjoy his performances, even though he's 1,000 times better actor than George Lazenby. So Lazenby gets the role, and this is weird because we get one of the most unique movies in the entire series. It's almost like this movie in some ways doesn't even happen in the larger, you know, Eon James Bond universe, because it's the things that happen in it are referred back to in passing a couple of times later, you know, that he's had a wife, but that was a long time ago. I think in one of the Dalton movies, I think Leiter says to his girlfriend, he had a wife. He was married once, but that was a long time ago, and they don't want to talk about it. And of course, at the beginning of For Your Eyes Only, they do the whole bit where he visits the grave. Mm-hmm. Roger Moore's version does, but this movie had a darker tone. I'm going to say a good bit about this movie real quick. But what do you think about when you think back to the 1969 On Her Majesty's Secret Service?
Who is it?
Bond. There may be a connection between that man Blofeld and the lawyer with offices in Bern, Switzerland.
This is a photostat copy of a letter addressed to our College of Arms in the City of London, with the request that they undertake to establish de Blosham's claim to the title.
De Blosham?
French form of Blofeld.
Merry Christmas, 007.
If my demands are not met, I shall proceed with the systematic extinction of whole species of cereals and livestock all over the world.
What she needs is a man to dominate her.
Why do you persist in rescuing me, Mr. Bond?
It's becoming a habit, isn't it?
This department is not concerned with your personal problems.
This department owes her a debt. I have the honor to request you will accept my resignation, effective forthwith.
Fancy meeting you here, Fraulein.
We must stop him!
I love
you. Oh, no, Mr. Bond.
I know I'll never find another girl like you. Will you marry me?
I mean, I think about the ending. I think about Bond gets married and then Blofeld kills the girl.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think about this movie. There's a great ski chase scene. A lot of it takes place at this base atop the mountains in Switzerland. And So there's a lot of stuff there. There's a great ski chase scene, but also I think to me, this is the movie where Bond gets married and the girl in Blofeld kills the girl at the end. Yeah. That's what I think about.
That's what people remember. Yeah. But there's so much about it. Like, there's so many things that stand out. It has a different Bond than any other movie. It's the only Bond movie that doesn't have lyrics to the theme song. It just shows highlights from the previous Connery movies, interestingly.
Weird.
Yeah. It has the champagne glasses and the crest and the girls kneeling on either side of it. And it just plays that music, which I've probably just played. It's the only one that's an instrumental. It also has another song, though, associated with it that's great, which is We Have All the Time in the World, of course, which is a fantastic song. But it's so heart-wrenching when you realize what it's referring to. And as we find out later, that's even on Tracy's grave, as We Have All the Time in the World. It's the last thing that Lazenby says in the movie. When the policeman comes up and says, anything wrong? And she's lying there dead. And he says, no, she's just resting. But we have all the time in the world. Mm. and then it has a completely different Blofeld. It's as if You Only Live Twice never happened. Because remember, Bond saw Blofeld in You Only Live Twice, and he tried to kill him. They tried to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
And now Bond walks into Blofeld's Swiss allergy clinic, which is awesome, and pretends to be a heraldry expert. And Blofeld is like, oh, Mr. Whatever his name is. Sir Hilary Bray, yeah. Oh, Sir Hilary, welcome to my allergy clinic. And it's like, you just tried to kill him in the last movie.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, you two just tried to kill each other.
Yeah, so I'm like, I guess he's a different guy, so he didn't recognize him, right? But it's interesting that it's like, this is what I mean when I say it's almost like this movie happens in a completely different universe, because what happened prior to it doesn't seem to have happened, and you'd think that with the next one after it, it would be very dark and would be Bond going after Blofeld to try to kill him, which he does, but not in the way, the way that the next one, Diamonds Are Forever, starts. It's just like another operation for Bond. It's not like he's on a vendetta to kill the man who killed his wife.
Exactly.
It's just like he's after just anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, On Her Majesty's Secret, I mean, that movie is gorgeous. If you haven't watched On Her Majesty's Secret Service in a while, you, John, or anybody out there, if you haven't watched it in a while, get the DVD, get the Blu-ray, whatever, and watch it, because the cinematography on this movie is almost unmatched among any of the movies. It's a gorgeous movie. The people that were working on this one were at the top of their game, and they're not, I don't think, the same people they had on all of them. It's a different director, I think. It has different maybe cinematographer and all that. The vistas with the base up in the mountains, up in the Alps. The helicopters coming in with Draco, the Tracy's father. And, of course, you have the great Diana Rigg as Teresa or Tracy, who becomes Mrs. Bond. Everything about that movie. You even have Lazenby at the beginning saying, this never happened to the other fellow right before you go into the opening credits, this is a really great movie. It's very underrated, I think, and it needs people to go and see it. And it's interesting too, is it looks very 1960s. It's made in 69, or it comes out in 69, but it looks so 60s. And then when you jump to 1971, for the last of the official Eon movies with either of these two actors we've talked about tonight, suddenly it looks like 1975.
Mm-hmm. Because, it looks like a different planet.
Oh, it does. Yeah. If you look at, if you watch On Her Majesty's Secret Service and then you immediately watch Diamonds Are Forever, you would never guess that only 2 years have passed in the real world. Never guess. Because Connery comes back in 1971 for Diamonds Are Forever.
80% of the world's diamonds come from mines in South Africa.
So I don't think someone stockpiling them.
What we need to know is who the stockpilers are.
Curious how everyone who touches those diamonds seems to die.
A dentist is dead in South Africa. That little old lady in Amsterdam. Shady got his last night. They missed me once. And you're next.
We've got to get those diamonds out of here and fast.
What are they?
They say Willard White hasn't set foot out of there in 3 years. And no one has seen him. No one.
This is not the real White House. And he's not the president. Why don't we just go and see him?
Hello, Frank.
I do so enjoy our little visits, Mr. Bond. However potentially painful they may be.
Who are you?
One chance. Where can I find him?
Let's get down to business.
Whatever's happened, Mr. Bond, has started.
You just killed James Bond.
Now, this movie, Connery had said he was done. He wasn't going to do it anymore. But what had happened was Lazenby kind of, the fame went to his head, one, and he's like, I'm James Bond, look at me. And he starts partying and spending all of his money and getting drunk and all that. And then he falls in with some, this is true, he falls in with like some hippies in the late 60s and decides, oh, Bond is a warmonger and a terrible character. I'll never play him again. It's like Lazenby in an interview starts saying, I'll never play James Bond again. He's out of touch with this new age, you know. He's a thug from the old Cold War, and we're past that here in our enlightened, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And so Lazenby basically talks his way out of being Bond anymore. And so with 2 years to make the next movie, the Eon people have to find something quick. And they say, you know what? Let's just throw money at Sean Connery. Anything he wants. And so I think in terms of adjusted for inflation, the salary Connery earns for Diamonds Are Forever is higher than what any other actor made after him all the way until Pierce Brosnan's last movie.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing, huh? I mean, they just gave him whatever he wanted to do it.
They clearly needed it if they were going to make another movie because they couldn't go back. They didn't have anybody else laying around who could do it. So.
Right. But if you look at Diamonds Are Forever, you can tell that like half the budget went to Connery and the other half went to everything else. I mean, they recycled Charles Gray, who has been the Japanese, the British guy in Japan that helped him in You Only Live Twice. They recycled Charles Gray as Blofeld. And I like him. He's the only Blofeld really in the Eon movies with hair.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the suave, aristocratic Blofeld. I like that. I like his attitude in this movie. He's really cool. You have Jimmy Dean as
Willard White.
Willard White. Hey, Jimmy. Let me bring that one up so I can make sure that I have everything I want to mention about it. I know we're kind of running through these quick, but we've got other things to say too. Before we wrap up here, Jill St. John as Tiffany Case, which is kind of cool. Oh, and you have, I think, two of the greatest henchmen in the entire series. I mean, there's a lot to be said bad about Diamonds Are Forever. It has not aged well. And speaking of aging, Sean Connery has definitely aged in it. It's like
he
comes back reluctantly, but he's like, you know, if you compare the Connery just 10 years earlier, just 9 years earlier in Dr. No, he looks like 30 years older in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was sleek and lean and mean in Dr. No and From Rush with Love and Thunder and Goldfinger, even in Thunderball. And now, like, it's like he's just been kicking back, chowing down, and aging 20 years in about 5 years. So he's kind of just doing it for the money and for fun. Though he did, I think, donate the money from this to Scottish charities, which is great, but it was a lot of money. Jill St. John as Tiffany Case is a very odd character because, like, the first half of the movie, she's a very together villain girl. And in, like, the last half of the movie, she's a eek, protect me, victim girl. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Once she puts the bikini on, she's just all like, oh, James, save me, you know. Whereas at the beginning, she's like, you just killed James Bond, you know. So what do you think about when you think about Diamonds Are Forever?
Well, when I think about they go to Las Vegas, and they go to Willard White's suite. Again, we have Blofeld in it again, like you said, but it's a different Blofeld. I think about the two henchmen.
Yes. I meant to – yeah, there was more I was going to say about them. Go ahead.
Very creepy.
Yes. They're awesome.
You know, it's Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd.
Yes, yes.
And these two creepy guys, very, very strange, very creepy, very disturbing. I mean, they're really good henchmen villains.
Yeah.
And they're so – the way they talk to each other and the way they talk to Bond.
They scared me to death when I was a little kid. This was the movie I think that this came out in 71. And so when I was a little kid, just like you, in the early 70s, this is the one they'd show a lot on ABC Sunday nights, you know, when they'd show a Bond movie like every Sunday night. And, man, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd creeped me out. They scared me.
They did. They're really good. And then also, I mean, at the end, there's a big battle off an oil platform.
Yeah.
You know, again, with Bond there and kind of the army coming in to rescue him, that kind of thing. So
Baja California. I ain't got nothing in Baja California. That's how they figure out where Blofeld is, which is absurd. But, you know, there's a lot of absurd things, you know, in this movie. But like you have the great opening scene with where he is trying to kill Blofeld and he tracks him down in a plastic surgery clinic inside. Yes. Like, what's like a volcano and there's all this mud. Yes. And he buries him in the mud.
Yes.
And like the gun comes up out of the mud and he drops the mud on him. And it's just, by the way, I learned that the mud in that scene is all mashed potatoes that have been colored. And the mashed potatoes spoiled under all the movie lights. And it said it smelled so bad that the film people and the actors were like throwing up in between takes.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it smelled so bad. They forgot that it was food, you know, and it was going to rot. So they had a hard time with that. But it's hilarious. So, yeah, I there's a lot about this movie I love and there's a lot about it I hate. It really, I mean, probably more than any other Bond movie, there's stuff I absolutely love and stuff I can't stand. Right within 15 seconds of each other as you go through the movie. I mean, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd get some of the best lines in the whole series, you know, with my favorite one, like when they're talking to the dentist and they put the scorpion down his back. And then when the helicopter guy comes in, he says, where's Dr. Whatever? Oh, he's taken ill, bitten by the bug. And then when the helicopter guy flies away, he blows up and he goes, if God had wanted man to fly, Mr. Kidd, he would have given them wings, Mr. Wint. Or I have the names backwards, but, you know. And they just have so many lines all the way through. There's the crematory scene. They're going to set him on fire. And the diamonds keep popping up here and there all the way through it. And it's really hard to follow the plot in some cases in this movie. And in fact, you know, I was just learning that there's a bunch of scenes that were cut out of this movie, including Lana Wood, who is Natalie Wood's little sister, who's gorgeous, plays Plenty. That's another one of the great names is when she comes up, Plenty comes up while he's gambling, you know, and she says, hi, I'm Plenty. And he's like, well, I can see that. And she says, Plenty O'Toole. And he goes, this is great. And he goes, name for your father, I assume. That's awesome. And then, you know, she gets thrown out the hotel window. Now, here's the weird part. She gets thrown out the hotel window and lands in the pool. The next time we see her, she's dead floating in Jill St. John's pool. And they never explain how she goes from one pool to the other. But there's, if you go on YouTube, there's a clip where she gets out of the hotel pool, goes back up to the hotel room wet, sees Bond in bed with Jill St. John, is infuriated, goes and searches through Jill St. John's purse, finds her address, and goes to Jill St. John's house. And when she gets to Jill St. John's house, the bad guys show up, think she's Jill St. John, and kill her in the pool.
That makes more sense what happens in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, how did this random girl that was hitting on Bond end up in this lady's swimming pool? It made no sense. Made no sense at all in the movie. So, yeah, it just for whatever reason, I guess they were in a hurry or whatever, they just edited the crap out of this movie, and it really doesn't make as much sense in a lot of ways. But it's got, again, it's got some classic scenes in it. So, okay, couple things left before we wrap up. One is Kevin McClory, like I said earlier, got the rights to basically remake Thunderball as many times as somebody would pay him to do. And in 1983, he got to do it.
Sean Connery is James Bond, Agent 007. Never say never again.
My name's Bond.
Oh, you're Mr. Bond. I believe I'm having you in half an hour.
Oh, splendid.
Your room or mine?
Have you, Mr. Bond?
You're marvelously well equipped.
Thank you, James. So are you.
Good to see you, Mr. Bond. Things have been awfully dull around here. I hope we're going to have some gratuitous sex and violence.
I certainly hope so, too.
Bond, the game is over.
Sean Connery is Ian Fleming's James Bond in Never Say Never Again.
With the legendary non-Eon James Bond film, didn't get to use the music, didn't get to use anything like that, Never Say Never Again. Do you know why it's called Never Say Never Again?
No.
Because Connery had said, I will never play James Bond again. And so they got him to do it. They threw money at him. And basically he did it because he was so mad at the Eon guys, Broccoli and Salzman, that he did it just to spite them. In other words, I'll play James Bond for McClory, but not for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it went up against that year one of the later Roger Moore movies, Octopussy. So that was the year of two Bond movies that summer. We actually had two James Bond movies the same summer. Neither of them what you call classics.
No.
This is the one famous for Connery wearing the toupee and trying to look, 30 years younger or something. And it was basically Thunderball all over again with a slightly altered story. And it was very 80s. You had Kim Basinger as like an aerobics instructor girl. Do you remember? What do you remember of this movie? Anything? I'm sure it's probably been 20 years since you saw it. 30 years.
I remember it was very similar to Thunderball because it ends with a big underwater battle scene.
Well, it's them stealing a NATO jet and stealing the nuclear bombs, just like Thunderball.
Right, and it was exactly the same thing. But then they end up having an underwater battle to get it back. In this case, it was. Largo is doing it, but it was in a different part of the world, it seems like. It was in the Middle East or something. But
there was something involving that, yeah. And it actually had Blofeld in it, with another Blofeld with hair, and I thought this was inspired casting for Blofeld, was they had Max von Sydow with the cat, which I love Max von Sydow. He's one of the great movie villains of our time. I just
sure.
love Max von Sydow. And so he played Blofeld, and he's great. So it had a lot of things going for it. It had, Klaus Maria Brandauer as Largo?
Yes.
And I want to say Carrera, what's her name? I don't have the page open in front of me. They had
Barbara Carrera.
Barbara Carrera, yeah, as the evil hench girl, henchman woman, right? This is, there were a lot of Bond movies where you had like the evil Bond girl and the good Bond girl.
That's right.
A lot of them. And I think Pierce Brosnan, all of his did basically. And so, yeah, it was okay. I don't know. I enjoyed it more than Octopussy because I was just really tired of Roger Moore by 1983. But it's not a great movie either. So
it's not it's a pale version of the original.
And what it really shows is how important that music and everything that goes along with it is, because without that, it's just like another spy movie, even with Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
You lose what makes it so special as Bond when you take away the gun barrel and the music and all that. So. Okay, so that kind of brings us to the end of the Connery-Lazenby era. I have some trivia questions for you before we wrap up. But but before we do that, do you have any concluding overall thoughts about the movies we've talked about tonight?
No, I think I think a lot of Bond movies later get very formulaic and silly and stuff. And I think there's some really good underappreciated movies in here. But I think the first four are very strong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, I think that, yeah, without a doubt, the first four are absolutely classic. And without a doubt, probably just in objective terms, as opposed to my own sentimental, memories, I mean, they're the best. I love You Only Live Twice for sentimental reasons, just like I love Pierce Brosnan as Bond for sentimental reasons. But I can step back objectively and say, yeah, it has a lot of story problems that things don't make a lot of sense in it. That's a problem that would plague a lot of those early and middle year Bond movies, is stuff that just doesn't make a lot of sense that happens just because it's cool. But when you stop and think, you're like, wait a minute, why did that happen? to be fair, though, there's stuff in Quantum of Solace that I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Why did that happen? So it's not just the early ones.
No.
Right. All right. You ready for a few trivia questions? I'm going to save some for next time and for our last time, but I have a few for you here. These are from all across the entire series. So
yeah. Mine are from the later movies. Can I hold mine?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You hang on to yours for our next couple episodes, and I just hit you with a few here and we'll wrap up. We don't want to run over late. All right. Let's see. First one up. This animal is the symbol of Spectre, and it's on their rings, and it's on a T-shirt that my wife is making for me for conventions this year.
Is it a bat?
Oh, it's a good guess. It's an octopus.
Oh, that's right.
All right. Let's see. We already talked about this one, so you should be able to get this, and it won't come up again, really. This city has appeared in at least two Bond films, including the market chase scene in Skyfall and the action involving Karim Bey in From Russia with Love, in which they paddle through...
No, it's Istanbul.
Istanbul, yeah. Underground reservoirs, which are still there. I hope. let me see. Who or what was Little Nelly, and who was her father? This is from one of the early ones. Who or what was Little Nelly? Call M, ask him to deliver Little Nelly and her father.
Is it a submarine?
Oh, close. Try again. You're very close. Different medium of transportation.
Okay, it was a...
It's from
a motorcycle?
It's from You Only Live Twice, when he's going to check out the volcano.
It was a helicopter.
It's the little helicopter.
It's the little one-man helicopter.
Yes, and who is Little Nelly's father then, obviously?
Big Nelly?
No, that would bring him and set him up with it.
Oh, Q.
Q, there you go. Yes. All right, let's see. I'm trying to look for ones that are early on, since we're talking about those here. Let's see. This is the company... That is the code name, cover name for MI6 in all the Bond movies.
Oh, I was going to ask you this question.
I got to you first.
Dang it.
What is it?
It's Universal Exports.
Universal Exports. Yeah, it's on the helicopters. It's on the buildings, everything. Yeah. Let me find like two more from early on. That's a Roger Moore. That's a Pierce Brosnan. That's a later one. Okay. There are two films where the opening credits are instrumental with no lyrics. They're both very early on. Mm-hmm. One of them, actually, no, you know what? I'm wrong. There's three. There's three films where the opening credits are instrumental with no lyrics. One of them plays the lyrics over the closing credits. The other one never has lyrics at all. And another one, I guess, is just kind of a mixture of music. Let me just put it this way. I'm going to go ahead and give you one. Dr. No, the opening credits are completely different from any of the others, so forget that. Other than Dr. No, there's two more that don't have any lyrics, at least in the beginning. Name either one.
Yeah, you're not talking about the fake Bond Connery.
No. The early Eon movies. I think we mentioned one earlier.
I mean, From Russia with Love was one.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, you got the other one. Yeah, I mentioned On Her Majesty's Secret Service didn't have any lyrics at all.
That's right.
If you get the Bond like theme song CD or album, whatever, it's a piece of music on there by itself. But yeah, the opening credits of From Russia with Love was instrumental, and you only hear I can't think of the guy's name that sings it. From Russia with Love, that guy. You only hear that in the at the end as they're like, you know, going down the river or whatever, the water. So when he unfurls the little, you know, film that they took of him. So yeah, those are the two. Every other one has Shirley Bassey usually or somebody like that belting out some standard. All right, I'm going to give you one more that's from a different from later on just because it'll be fun. In The Spy Who Loved Me, James Bond's car turns into what?
Submarine.
Submarine, yes. All right, you got it. Oh, I saw a cool T-shirt with this the other day, by the way. It's got the submarine car up on blocks, and there's a sign on the windshield that says something like, slight water damage, make an offer. Which I thought was
nice.
Yeah. All right, so those are the awesome Sean Connery Bond movies. I've had a fun time walking down memory lane. John, I hope you have.
I have. It's been fun.
It's been fun. Yeah, absolutely. So join us in an upcoming, when we get a chance to do it, a future episode where we'll look at the Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton Bonds and maybe talk a little bit about why we don't think Moore's are quite to the quality of Connery, certainly. And then I think Dalton's are very controversial because some people really like him and some people really don't. So, all right. Well, I guess at that point, the rocket's going to get on out of here. By the way, don't forget to check out our other show, the AU Wishbone, if you are in the mood for sports talk. And always visit the WhiteRocketBooks.com site to see my books and other authors' new offerings, www.whiterocketbooks.com. And thanks, as always, to Earth Station One for helping to bring you these shows. So the rocket's going to get on out of here. Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, we'll see you.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.